Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran. And of course, we've got Rob Greenlee down on the bottom there. Rob, good morning. How are you?
Hey, morning.
Well, you know, it's I think this show, we need to change it to the technical difficulty show. It seems like every Saturday morning we are screwing around for 20 minutes. I think we just changed the start show time by 20 minutes and we'll be safe. But
what it really tells me is that we're still a ways off on really having a seamless way of doing this that doesn't have a lot of technology issues.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would have thought that we would have made this a lot easier.
You know, and the thing that I was talking with Andy McCaskey, and he says the same thing. He says this is the number one thing that always messes him up is Skype, or, you know, it's not necessarily the in-studio stuff that gets him, but it's the interconnects and all that. So, you know, and I think even some other folks that are doing this on a bigger scale are having some of the same issues, you know?
Yeah, I think you're really just trying to connect too many different types of devices and scenarios, and it just makes it really challenging. I mean, you got so many different places where you can control volumes, and you've got mixers involved and different kind of microphones, and I don't know how you solve this problem, but it seems to be, you know, in these something about these web cameras.
Yeah. Well,
what
I've actually got set up now is because originally when I put this studio together, because I was going from computers to pro equipment and everything else, I had to put line levelers in and hum eliminators. And so far it's been pretty good. Last Saturday on the Hangout, everyone was good. But when one person connected, then we got this kind of the same noise that we're hearing. At least I was hearing as feedback from you. And now, you know, you just added a new webcam, so I'm kind of curious if they're the same type of webcam, but it's almost like they're picking up a ground loop or something. But now it's not bad, and I can hear it, but it may not make the recording. That's another thing that is weird, you know?
So are you filtering out that kind of stuff before it goes out?
Well, when you have something like this that's in there, it's very hard to...
To get it out.
Yeah, to get it out without it, how should I say, without it warbling the voice. But, yeah. I tell you, it's we've had a couple of interesting weeks. I went out on travel. I was out in New Mexico, so we didn't have a show. And then had the Geek News Central blogging team on last week, which was a lot of fun. We're going to probably try to do that once a month. Andy is doing more and more grandpa stuff now. He's babysitting or something today. He's not available. So it's pretty hard for him. You know, he does a full 5 days of shooting video and stuff. And then he comes back to the studio. Comes back, and I want him to come in on a Saturday. And, you know, he's got his daughters are tasking him up for taking care of grandkids. So I'm not in that situation yet.
I'm not either.
So that's a good thing, but we'll see how long it lasts. Went to my kid's homecoming last night and saw my first high school football game in probably 20 years. So that was it was entertaining, to say the least. Things have not changed on that front. I couldn't believe it that my 15-year-old boy, he actually sat beside, I mean, my 14-year-old boy sat beside me. But, you know, I noticed. Oh, that's weird. Let's get in feedback again. Him and his friends were all, had their phone, and they're watching the football game about 25% of the time, and they're texting with the girls the other 75% of the time. And I'm like, where's this girl at? Is she, you know, is she home? Or, and he goes, oh no, she's, he points, you know, over there somewhere. And I'm like, go over and talk to her. Yeah. You know, don't sit here. Oh, I can't do that. You know, so, you know, I'm trying to be kind of quiet and not Snoop. You know, he's with his hanging with his buddies. He's actually his robotics team. And why they're sitting by me, I have no idea in the first place. So I'm trying to not embarrass him. And I keep overhearing these things. And he's like, yeah, I think she may go out with me. You know, I'm hearing these typical guy talk, but they're texting back and forth. And the other guys, and actually there was one gal with them as well. And they're all looking at each other's texts. It is a different world.
We didn't have texting and phones and stuff like that when we were growing up.
No, you know, and kind of scary, you know. So at some point, I think him and I are going to have a heart-to-heart and say, yo, dude, you know, man up and go over and sit down and say hello. If you're that interested, you know, go over there and say hi, if nothing else, you know. Because if they don't accomplish that, then they're stuck behind the keyboard, you know. How are they going to do text in a relationship with one sitting on the couch and one sitting on the lazy boy?
That's the kind of the scary point of what's happening with kind of communication nowadays. It's like, well, you would think that the technology would enable us to be better connected with each other. And I think to a certain extent that's true, but it's also giving us a real excuse not to physically connect with other people.
Right.
And I think, and that may be a bad thing in the long run.
You know, he's still a little shy, so that might be part of it too. But, you know, it's almost like passing notes in class or something. It's kind of odd. And so this was the first time that we'd been in a real public event like that where, you know, I guess for a 14-year-old, there's lots of targets of opportunity. And, I remember growing up going to football games. That was, you know, you went to football games to try to meet girls or meet girls from the other high school. And, you know, that was the whole social thing, you know, it was huge. And as a matter of fact, I think I met my first girlfriend from a different high school at a football game or something like that. But, you know, and he's, you know, I see him checking out, a couple of, gals from another school. And I said, you know, you gotta go over there and get their names. You know, you gotta go over and say hello. And, you know, say, my name's Ray. What's yours? So.
It can't really date via Google Hangout.
No, you know, but I think they date via text. You know?
Yeah.
And they solve all their problems via text. So I guess, you know, I'm getting exposure to this. I'm sure there's a lot of parents saying, dude, where you been? You know, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Welcome to the reality of the digital age.
Yeah, no kidding. I think I want to start the show off today, Rob, with a fun article. And there's an article over it. This popped a couple of days ago. It's a Business Unusual Network. Excuse me, businessunusual.net. And they got an article about a new tax collection system in Germany. Have you heard about this?
No, I have not.
Well, what they have done, they have decided to figure out how to tax the world's oldest profession. So what they're doing is they have tax meters for German prostitutes. And essentially what they are asking the ladies of the night to do is to pay their share fare of taxes via a portable kiosk. So they've set this thing up, and I don't know exactly how it works. There's a 55-second YouTube video that we could watch, but long story short here, you know, they're with everyone broke in the world, everyone's got to do something to collect taxes. So, you know, I think this is probably will give our politicians some thought, because the next thing they're going to do is, hey, if we can put tax meters on the street for ladies of the night, then we can probably put tax meters in train stations, in our cars. You know, that what was that movie where Arnold Schwarzenegger was, you know, frozen, woke up in the future, and every time he cussed in his car, he got a ticket or something like that. You remember that video or that movie?
So does this mean that the government is going to become a pimp of sorts?
Well, at least in Germany they are. And, you know, I don't know what the prostitution laws are in Germany. It's, you know, they're a lot less, I guess, for a better word, anal about that kind of stuff in Europe than they are here in the United States. But, you know, can you imagine them installing a tax meter for ladies of the night in L.A. down on Wilshire Boulevard?
It's hard for me to grasp the concept, that's for sure.
The question is, how are they going to enforce it? You know, it's kind of a cash business. You know, cash, Uncle Sam doesn't like cash so much because Uncle Sam can't track cash, at least yet, until they start putting some, you know, some sort of chip in our money. But
that's coming.
It could be coming. It sure could. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're able to track, you know, most of the transactions, which are, you know, electronic transactions.
Right.
It's just the physical cash exchanges. And I'm sure there's, you know, there's been, what I think in the last couple of weeks, there's been some news out about these really thin microprocessors. They're almost like clear kind of, you know, almost like tattoos that you can put on your body. I can see that being applied to currency.
Well, it's probably true. And you know, I think the thing here that, that Amazon basically decided to cave. And so we're now, Amazon is within a year, if the state Senate in California agrees, instead of fighting the paying sales tax, a year from about now, when you go on Amazon.com living in California and you buy a product or a service, they're going to collect sales tax on you. And so, you know, that to me is Pandora's box has been opened, and all the other states are going to say, hey, why do we want to leave this money on the table?
Yeah.
And California seems to think it's a huge number. I think they said 200 billion, which seems high to me. Maybe 200 million. That sounds more like it. 200 million in lost revenue from sales tax collections from online purchases from, I guess, from Amazon. It makes sense it would be Amazon because there has to be more than $200 million in sales tax on online purchases in California.
Yeah, I think they're the largest retailer probably. I'm sure that there's a lot of others that are probably impacted by this stuff too.
And I don't know if they made a rule if you have to be a company of a certain size. You know, if I was forced to have to charge sales tax on every transaction that we do, you know, what do I have? 100 customers maybe in California? Or you know, I don't know exactly what our customer count is there, but state to state, if I have to send in sales tax, you know, $3 check for sales tax collected for customers in Wyoming or something like that, that's just an overhead nightmare that doesn't make it worth doing business in those states.
Well, I think if that was the case, there would have to be some kind of online software system that would simplify that.
It has to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but you know, none of the point of purchase systems are set up to support that. So all your commerce systems are going to have to be updated so that it recognizes a zip code and knows exactly which sales tax rate to charge. You know, here in Hawaii, my specific zip code has the state of Oahu, or not state, the county of Oahu has county of Honolulu. Boy, I'm totally messing up here. County of Honolulu has a special assessment on state sales tax. Whereas if you are on the Big Island or Maui or Kauai, you don't pay this extra special assessment. So, you know, you have to know district from district which sales tax to charge. But yeah, it has to be automated. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that this would have been done a long time ago. I mean, really, it's this whole sales tax issue it's still just now coming up and is an issue. I was talking about this subject on my radio show 10 years ago. You know,
yeah.
I thought for sure that they would have pushed forward processes to be able to do this kind of stuff, but. You know, I mean, it's probably been good for everybody that it hasn't happened quite as much. But I do pay sales tax, you know, when I buy stuff at Amazon.
You do now?
Yeah.
Really? So maybe Washington State's had that in place for a while.
Well, I think it depends on where. See, Amazon doesn't sell, doesn't physically ship or sell everything that they have on their website. So if you, from a merchant that's in a state that doesn't have any process for doing that or isn't required, which oftentimes is the case. I mean, you know, when you buy stuff from Amazon, it's not always buying directly from an Amazon warehouse.
Right.
You're buying from some third party somewhere that's maybe back in New York or on the East Coast that doesn't have the whole sales tax stuff. But if you buy stuff directly from Amazon, and since Amazon is in the state of Washington, so sometimes it can vary just based on what you buy.
Right. Well, one of, you know, Matt, who is one of our, well, just, I'm going to switch topics on you, Rob. Matt, one of the guy that produces Robot Underpants, he saw a UFO over San Francisco last night. You want to see this? There's no audio to this. And let me bring this up here. Okay, hang on. You'll see it in a second here. Okay, so we got a light here. Let me expand this and take this down. Okay, now watch this thing. It is kind of odd. And it doesn't have a standard blinking Can you see that in your video? It's hard to tell what the scale of this is.
It's really dark. I can't.
Yeah, and you can't hardly see it, but the I question the maybe some kid having a remote controlled airplane or something like that with some lights on it, because it's kind of flying, and it's flying about the speed that you would need. But it is, it just to me doesn't look like it scales big enough. But anyway, that he thinks he saw a UFO. So I thought I would share that with you.
I think a lot of people, you know, when they hear that term UFO, they immediately think of a
flying saucer
object, but it's really, most UFOs are just unidentified flying objects. They're not necessarily space saucers.
Well, you do know I saw a space saucer. You've heard my story on the space saucer, right?
I don't think so.
Oh my gosh, you haven't been listening to my show enough. Those that have been a long time listeners of my show know that when I was about 13, my family and I, we were coming up. It was a nice, warm summer night, so we had the windows down in the car. That was, matter of fact, my dad, this was before people really had, AC was a luxury in a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so this would have been in the 70s, and it would have been 70s, late 70s, 78, 79, something like that. But anyway, we're driving home from my town. And the town that I lived or was closest to was 13 miles. My house was 13 miles away from a city of about 12,000 people. And I truly lived on a dirt road in the country. But we were coming home and we were still on the pavement. We had stopped at a T intersection. My dad had turned right. And this part of the road was a road with a lot of big maple trees. But these were really old maple trees, really tall. The canopy started pretty high off the ground, probably 10 to 15 feet up. But they were spaced such that there was houses on this left-hand side of the road. And as we were driving down the road, it wasn't too far, maybe a quarter of a mile, we noticed this object pretty low to the ground, hanging just above maybe housetop level. And it had a couple of lights on it, and it looked to me like, have you ever seen these barrels that get buried by gas stations? They're huge, like these 10,000-gallon fuel tanks. You ever seen one of those?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, it looked like that. Now, it was a moonlit night, so it was bright. It was, you know, you could see, but it had that shape, but it was darker than dark. I mean, you couldn't see through it, but my dad was so taken aback, but he stopped the car. and this object moved, and it's just poking along. I wouldn't say too fast, 25, 30 miles an hour, but it stopped and it does a lateral turn, and it rises up a little bit and comes across the highway or comes across this road, and we see it. I lose view of it because I'm in the passenger right hand side seat in the back. So I lose view of it as it comes across the top of the car. But as it comes out, I've got like this straight on view of this thing. And I mean, there's no noise. And it's moving very distinctly. It comes across the highway. It goes 100 feet, stops, does another one of these lateral movements. And about that time, my dad must have got the shit scared out of him, because we were in an old Chrysler, and it was one of those big boat Chryslers that was probably, 20 feet long. I'm exaggerating, but it was a big car. And he punches it to the, he puts the hammer down, and this thing starts pacing us. And it wasn't maybe 40 seconds, and it just did one of those classic UFO things. It goes, shoop, and it was gone. And, I was never, one of those kids that, had the curtains closed at night. We didn't have AC in the house, so the windows always had to be open, and, to get a breeze. I mean, I was so scared of what I had seen that for several years, I probably pulled the curtains down at night. It freaked us all. My dad wouldn't talk about it. Would not talk about it. And my mom and I have talked to him. Huh?
Yeah, so he didn't want to get labeled as one of those UFO.
Yeah.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah, but my mom and I talked about it at length. And that, I'll never forget. I'll never forget seeing that thing. It's one of those things that sticks in your mind. 13 years old, you don't remember too much, but I remember that night. So, that was my close encounter, and I don't know.
Yeah, I saw one too back in the early 70s myself, up here in Washington.
So what did you see?
Grandmother's window, down in Shelton, Washington. So it was, and I think it was back during that time when there were quite a few sightings around Mount Rainier.
Was it day or night?
It was actually it was the early morning. So it was just kind of like dawn.
Uh-huh.
And I saw, her kitchen window looks out over kind of this city is called Shelton. And I could see this object that just kind of was kind of like a rounded shaped object that kind of floated over the city and stopped.
Whoa.
And it just stayed there. And it had like blinking lights on it, but it wasn't like a blimp or anything like that. It looked like something that would be, like an aircraft of some sort, but it wasn't a helicopter, and it wasn't a blimp, and it wasn't an airplane because it wasn't actually going anywhere.
What was your distance from it?
I would assume I was probably at least maybe a mile or so
away
would be my guess.
Huh.
But I was pretty young. I was probably 8 years old, probably, back when I saw this thing.
So what did you think when you saw it?
I immediately thought it was some sort of a strange aircraft that, I didn't immediately think that it was, like a true, interstellar UFO at the time, but I watched it for a long period of time. It just sat there, and I got the impression that it was almost like it was spinning a little bit.
Huh.
But it had blinking lights on it, and it had kind of like that, kind of an oval shape to it.
Well, I saw something else after 9/11. I saw an interesting object that to this day I can't explain, and it wasn't in the United States. I was overseas, after we had basically deployed, and I've talked about it a few times, but it's one of those things that, and a whole bunch of people that was with me saw it too. It was one of those conversation pieces that went on for several weeks. And, it was just a very weird, and it wasn't like a, I guess the best way to describe it is as an orb. And it really didn't have a lot of substance to it. It was just freaking weird. And I can't go into too many details, but it was just really, really odd. The way it looked. And, we tried to really kind of rack our brains around other technology and, and back in the day, me and another guy were like, "Me, that's a UFO." Everyone else, "No, it's not a UFO." "Well, what the heck is it?" And everyone, comes to the conclusion, "That's a UFO,"
Yeah.
And it's been known that there's been a lot of sightings in the past during wartime, but there's also been, yep, speculation that it's been some other technology that, you don't know about that is being utilized during that time frame. But this was so weirdo, over the top, that there is just, and if it was technology, it's, boy, I tell you, we're in the wrong business right now for sure. because it was some weird stuff, but anyway, that was in my two close encounters of the third kind.
It's really interesting because I hear a lot of, witness testimony to these things from the 70s.
Right.
But you hear a little bit about these kind of things from the 80s and 90s, but...
I got my camera ready,
Yeah.
Come on. Where's this stuff happen when everyone's got cell phones in their pockets, and where's the sightings,
But that's a good lead into what I was trying to say was, but you don't hear of UFO sightings here in the 2000s. Yeah, I mean,
not in the United States, you don't. There's other places that have activity, but so what does that mean? Do they know we've got cameras now and they're restricting their access to nighttime, or, my grandma, who's, rest her soul, died when she was 98. She, in the early 60s, she got some stuff on a Kodak camera that, she got a visit by the Air Force back in Project Blue. And it was this was a thing that happened across an entire county. Many, many, many people saw it, but, got those pictures that she took at 8x10s that she took are in a safety deposit box.
Wow.
Yeah. Someday I've got to get them where I can scan them and then I'll have them, but I've got them all now in a state. And it was the old classic, she's not someone that would try to put some sort of a picture together, and it's, the typical, what back then was classified as the typical space UFO look, but
yeah, I just don't think it's really realistic to think that we've been visited by people from another planet or something like that.
Yeah, the distances
if you think about the distances in space, it's very unlikely. And I think all these sightings that we see are, experimental aircraft, or they're things that are being done by our government, I think.
Swamp gas?
Around. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the only explanation that actually makes sense. Or they're just kind of things that we mistake as other things.
Because the brain will play tricks on you, and sometimes your brain will, if you see you have multiple people that have the same brain trick, then you have to really question. But yeah, until someone gets the true smoking gun, gets an unrefuted video, Or they land and say your dinner, Yeah. Bon appetit. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've often thought that one of the things that's been going on. If you think about like the late 70s or that time frame, this country was very much involved in space exploration.
Oh yeah.
doing a lot of research around aircraft and technology and those kind of things. And it just seems like a kind of like the prime time for when those things were a big priority.
Yep.
And but with us not investing in space as much now, and I just don't get a sense that that's kind of experimental aircraft are necessarily a big focus right now.
You know, back in the day, back in the day, in the late 50s and early 60s, I had an uncle who was a full-bird colonel in the Air Force, and he was involved in the, I guess, the early Air Force / NASA days, and a rocket launch was highly classified. They didn't announce them. People knew when they launched them because they made a lot of noise, but you know, it wasn't something that was, you know, well, not like now where you got the news people down there and they're, and until Gemini, there was really very little, you know, because all the work that was done was tied back to strategic defense as well. So they were building rockets, not only for man, but also put nukes on.
Yeah.
You know,
but
so.
But it does kind of raise the topic with me, though, is if we had kind of aircraft like that that we were experimenting with back in the 70s.
Where are they?
What kind of aircraft might we possibly have that we don't know about now?
What does it
mean that we don't see it anymore?
You know, Rob, spending 24 years in the military and doing what I did, you know, that's, everyone has a sexy notion that there's, you know, all kinds of exotic, interesting aircraft out there. You know, I really don't think so. You know, there's definitely going to be projects. You know, they're going to have stuff that they're working on. I'm sure that, you know, this is speculation on my part that would be, you know, stealth or new technologies. But, you know, airplanes fly a certain way. They take wings and a propulsion source. And even though the propulsion source may be experimental, they still have to, you know, they generally have to take off the same way. But, you know, we do have VSTOL aircraft that, you know, can do vertical takeoff. And we've had that for a long time. So that can look pretty weird at night if someone sees. But generally, that's accompanied with a lot of energy, a lot of noise. And that carries a very long ways. So, you know, who knows, but, you know, I'm sure there are all kinds of crazy stuff that they do out in these restricted areas that none of us know about and where taxpayer dollars are being spent but, you know, I generally think most of that stuff is really truly defense oriented. And I can't imagine that they, you know, why would they expend that kind of money to build something, you know, unless it had a defense capability. Anyway, boy, we really went down a
straight.
straight here today. But anyway, kind of, this is what Saturday Morning Tech's about, talking about the anything and weird stuff. Hey, do you hear about this new thing that Nike is doing? They're auctioning. We're going to date ourselves here.
Back to the Future shoes.
Yeah, Back to the Future shoes. 1,500 pairs are being put on eBay, and I heard they're going for huge money. Like $3,500 bucks was the first one went for.
Yeah, I also heard that some private entity is matching the sales price of these things for
up to $50 million or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess they just light up. Is that the story here on these things?
Yeah, I think they do. I don't believe that they automatically lace up like they did in the movie. I think that was a special effect.
Yeah. So, you know, you're going to buy some shoes like this. You're going to want to wear them, you know, but I guess that is not the case here. They want to. It's a charity event for Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease charity, which is good.
But I do think that it's possible to make a shoe that has a couple of servos in it that could pull your laces.
Or servos, nothing else to, you know, you look what's being done with Segways and stuff like that. When are they going to put servos in their shoes to help us walk better or run faster or something like that?
Jump higher.
Yeah. For those of that are not mechanically inclined, get on a skateboard, you know, and not fall off and bust our goalies. Yeah. So anyway, cool. There is a, you know, there was a discussion made over this past week. I think that there was a little bit of a leak. You heard about this ice cream sandwich operating system?
It's the next version after Sandwich or something like that? Or
well, you know, they say Android Jelly Bean comes after ice cream sandwich.
That's right. Jelly Bean.
So, you know, we got Honeycomb. So how do we move from Honeycomb to Jelly Bean and ice cream sandwich?
It's all sweet stuff.
Yeah, there's got to be some connotation there. Ice cream sandwich. But I guess
read too much into it.
Yeah. A source tells us that he's hearing that game-changing stuff that has originally been scheduled for ice cream sandwich is now being pushed to Jelly Bean, though we don't know exactly what those big features are. Since its launch at Google I.O. in May, the implication has been that ice cream sandwich will help unify Android phones and tablet efforts. Well, they have to figure out how to make that system so that it can run on more devices without all these integration issues.
But sounds really unhealthy for you, though.
Yeah, actually, an ice cream sandwich right now sounds pretty good, considering it's 6:55 in the morning here in Hawaii. But, you know, there was a sneak peek of the new Google TV. Did you hear about that as well?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. Sony had a next-generation TV. Let's see if I can find it here. I have it in the stack. But it's interesting how they put all these code words on all these different. Okay, where's it at? I've got to be getting close. I know I have it in the stack here. Probably be the last. Oh, I didn't do it. Why don't I have this? All right, let me. I know where there's a link to it. But they showed a video of it running on Honeycomb, and there's speculation that the new Google TV Rev may roll as early as at the end of the month. Let's see here. Where is it? Sony shows off new Google TV. There we go. And we'll flip it up here. And there's actually an Engadget video on the device itself. And let me, is it going to play? Oh, we got to watch the ad first. So let me let the ad play before I come back to it. It looks pretty slick, and it's got basically a single menu bar across the bottom of the page, and they had a few select apps. They say Netflix has been rolled to Honeycomb, and so they're ready for the rollout. So it makes sense. Here we go. This is again a video from the folks at Engadget.
Oh yeah.
And this is actually a new device, so I'm hoping that it looks a little bit like the Roku interface from an actual navigation standpoint. But very cool stuff. I got a picture-in-picture going on. Got Kramer up there in the corner and giving his crazy stock advice. And then we've got, they're going to launch Major League Baseball. But yeah, I think Google's pretty committed to putting Google TV on the map. And, but they really have to, I think they got one last chance here with this Honeycomb rollout. And whether or not they're going to do well with this, well, let me come back to us. I guess the question is Apple TV going to, are they going to come out and play ball?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it not going to be a hobby anymore?
Yeah. Are they, you know, with Steve Jobs out? And I think he wanted, everything he does, it's, you know, he's already thought 5 years in advance. So there, you know, there has to be some plan, and I would hope that they would open it up to apps. And if they open it up to apps, I think that'll cause that device to explode overnight, don't you?
I think it would make a big difference, yeah. I mean, I'm a little skeptical of apps on TVs anyway, just in a general sense.
Really?
I'm not sure that, and it may just be because it's too early. It feels to me like it's just a lot of, it gives the user a lot of clutter that they have to deal with, and different UIs and different experiences, and I don't know. I can see it on a phone, and I can see it like maybe on a Slate or a tablet or a PC or something, but just something about people expect to have simplicity on a TV. It's a different expectation. It's a sit back, you know, 6-10 feet back from the TV, have a very simple remote control. I think that's the expectation that people have for their televisions. And I just really wonder about this computerizing of TVs, whether that's really gonna really hit the sweet spot with people. I don't know. I think it's still up in the air what type of user experience people want in the next generation TVs. I just think there's still a lot of experimentation going on right now. I guess we'll find out here over the next couple of years, I think, with the different platforms coming out, taking stabs at it.
Well, you know, I think he's, you know, it is a lot. I think a lot of this has to do with age group, too.
Yeah.
You know, Rob, I'm pushing, you know, I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40. And, but, you know, I consider myself a geek and a technologist, and I like to see what's going on and keep track of things. And I really think that my kids, they think TV sucks, you know, so they like being on, the Boxy Box or the Roku Box, and they like having choice. And, so, you know, my kids look at it different than I do. Now you look at what's being launched next week and, you know, politics aside, Glenn Beck is launching his TV network next week. And his digital TV network. So, you know, he's really the third big person to make the move. You've had Adam Carolla make the jump. And he's still doing a little traditional TV. So he made the jump. And he's got a big production now. Matter of fact, he just upgraded to a TriCaster, to an 850. Yep. So they're running the same box we are here. Leo has made the transition. Of course, Leo has, you know, always had a radio thing. But he's also been, you know, with TV. So there's two big guys that are digital. Now you've got a political guy who is, you know, probably as right can get. And he's going to, and you know what I did? You know, all politics aside, I want to see what he's doing. So I have actually, for a couple months, I'm going to be paying the $9.95 to see what they're going to have an insider show. And, but, you know, he spent probably, you know, several million dollars on his studio. He's going to have a traditional production staff. But I just want to see if their process is any really different than something that like Leo's employing or Adam Carolla's employing in their type of studio layouts that they have. And so, you know, if digital, and Glenn Beck's going to have a Roku channel, and it'll be to have a free and premium availability. So that tells me that at least a guy like him, who's, I think, he's been kind of kicked off TV, I guess, for a better word. We'll see if he can make a go of it. So, I don't know.
It makes you wonder if these efforts on these guys' parts, I mean, even Leo and now, the one you've been talking about here, are these guys doing this because they're trying to get back on television, or is it they're really trying to build a separate empire on the internet, which, you know, I believe is the smart strategy, but it just, it kind of makes you wonder a little bit, you know, because both of those guys, if you think about it, got kicked off of network TV.
Right.
so did Leo, right?
Well, they canceled the show or something, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, it's the same thing with Adam, too. He got kicked off of broadcast radio.
Yeah.
It does kind of make you wonder a little bit, as if the unsaid thing is that these guys are doing this to try and build their brand again so they can get back on broadcast again, because that's where the money is. Or are they doing it to truly build a empire in the next generation of digital, you know, of media?
I think Leo's been pretty vocal that he would never go back. Of course, you know, if someone shows you enough zeros on the end of a paycheck, that might change your thinking too.
That's been my kind of underlying thought, and maybe hedging their bets on both sides.
Right. And, you know, I think Leo's pretty sincere when he says he's not he's not doing this to go back to broadcast. I don't think his audience would revolt if he did, you know.
But let me lay out a different scenario. What if broadcast changed how they do things to be more like the internet?
Well, I'm going to tell you, they already are. They're trying.
No, then doesn't that change the scenario? I think the big reasons why these guys left broadcast is for the very reasons that they're finding success today that could ultimately bring them back on the broadcast side again at some point.
It's potential. You know, I think the big challenge is the money. You know, I think the broadcasters are having as much difficult time figuring out how to monetize. Well, see, here's the thing that the broadcasters have had. They've been able to scam advertisers for years. You know, they can charge them, what, $3 million for a Super Bowl advertisement, or $1 million or whatever it is. But yet they run primetime ads and they charge huge money for these ads. And are they really getting... I guess they don't care. You know, it's a fact. That's what you pay. But when you go to digital, all of a sudden, then when you're on digital, it can truly be measured. And because it can be measured, then the advertisers want to hold them accountable for their performance. And if you don't deliver, they're not going to pay the same amount of money. Yet they're willing to pay big bucks for something they really can't measure. And there's no performance standard. It's always blown me away, because we're all, you know, I'm always measured down to a nth degree. Well, you had so much of a performance on, we delivered so many new customers based on this campaign. And then yet you talk to their different division, you talk to their television. Oh, we're not, that's just a sponsorship. You know, we're not responsible for performance.
Well, and the broadcast side may not want to create a situation where they can be nitpicked like that.
Right.
I mean, be careful what you ask for,
That's right.
Because, you know, once the cover is pulled off on this the scheme, it, you know, the content provider may not like what they see.
Yep. You know, and I've got content creators that are also saying your CPM's not high enough. And I'm like, are you really worth more? If this content is good, it has high engagement. But, you know, there also comes a certain point when there is a little bit of ridiculousness to the request. You know, I've had some guys say, well, that's not enough. I'm like, well, good luck. Good luck to you out there in finding a sponsor that will stick with you for a long time. If you're not going to deliver performance, they're not going to continue to spend money. Yeah. So,
the broadcast and cable industry is trying to protect their double revenue streams. They got the advertising side, and they have the subscription side.
Yeah.
And as things move to the internet, then people cut that connection, right?
Yeah. And look what Starz was trying to do to Netflix. They're saying, we want a per subscriber component. We want the old model. We want you to charge each of your customers $2 to get the Starz stuff. And we want $2, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was per subscriber.
Over time, though, I think that cable model that we see today is definitely going to fade away. And I really wonder, as I look at kind of this whole app phenomenon, if at some point in the future that app model kind of gets adjusted, where it could be almost like an a la carte television scenario.
Well, I think that's what Google TV is trying to do.
Yeah.
But truly, you know, I think we both understand the battle is really for the HDMI 1 port. That's why the Google TV is designed the way it is, so that you come out of your cable box, you go into the Google TV, you come out of the Google TV and go into HDMI 1. Google knew that if you're not on HDMI 1 or port number 1, your chances of being successful are slim, because until people cut the cord, there is no way that people are not going to have their default turn on screen come to cable television.
Well, it's not so much that it's a battle over HDMI port. I mean, I think that's the destination, but I think really what the battle is over is the set-top box.
It's true.
You know, I think, you know, with what you saw with Google acquiring Motorola, I think that's a glimpse into really where the battle lies. If you look at the Xbox, Xbox wants to be your set-top box too, yep, in the long run.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate play. And then you look at Google's kind of playing both sides of the fence. They've got this, you know, this Google TV thing, and now they've bought Motorola, so they've kind of got both ends of the spectrum covered, right? So if a user wants to have, you know, a regular set-top box from a cable provider, they can have their software on there, and they can also, you know, hone and refine their TV experience on this Google TV product. So really the Google TV product is the experimentation for cable's set-top box technology, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. We had cut the cord here and back in January, I guess. And we really haven't missed cable TV too much. There's a few things that we can't watch. But my wife has been kind of getting on me. She wants a specific channel, so there's been a little pressure to bring cable TV back to the house. And we had Hawaiian Telecom, which has been our wired telephone provider, had been upgrading the neighborhood, and they're bringing digital TV in. So the sales guy, 2 or 3 weeks ago, stopped by the house, and he says, "Hey, we got you know, this bundled product. We've got a wired, right, a digital phone. We've got internet, and we have the TV." And I'm like, "Well, I'm really not interested." I said, "Your internet's not fast enough for me. Your DSL, as a matter of fact, you can see right there is my DSL modem." I said, "You know, your DSL, you can only get me about 3 down and at best, and sometimes a meg up." And he says, "Oh no, this new digital TV, you're going to get 25 down and a meg up." And I said, "25 down and a meg up?" He said, "Oh yeah." So I'm thinking to myself, I always need more broadband. And so I said, "Okay." Because what I would do is we wouldn't use a TV. I just want the internet. But you couldn't unbundle it. You couldn't buy the internet separately, which was, to me, very surprising. I don't know if there's a legal reason they're doing that. But a long story short, I ordered the television, phone, and internet service from them. I no more than get it ordered, Rob, and 3 days later, or 2 days later, my wife comes home. She says, "I heard on ad." So here we are. We're here in Hawaii. We've been, you know, stuck at like 10 megs down and 1 meg up since like 10 years. And there's, you know, I called a month ago to figure out what I could do to get more up speed, more dedicated up speed. And, you know, they're talking $1,000 a month. And I'm like, crazy, and I can't do it. So my wife said, "I just heard that they've got new broadband offerings from Roadrunner." And I'm like, "What?" So I went over to Roadrunner's website. They're now offering. Okay, so here, all these years, nothing. And then Hawaiian Telecom starts to compete with them and offering 25 meg 1 down. And lo and behold, 50 megs down, 5 up, $99.95 a month. So the guy comes Tuesday to increase my speed here. Just 2 weeks ago, they're talking $1,000 for 3 megs up.
Wow.
And now, 2 weeks later, I'm getting 5 megs up for $100 a month.
Wow. That's huge.
Well, it just goes to show you we're going to get competition. I guess we need to give the slaves a few more megabits, because if not, we're going to start losing customers. Finally, I have competition. So I haven't decided yet. I've delayed the install guys. Were supposed to both come on the same day. That'd have been funny. You have the Time Warner guy here at the same time as the Hawaiian Telecom. They were supposed to be in the same exact time slot. So I was going to just let it go and set up a camera and see how it worked out. But I decided to go ahead and delay the Hawaiian Telecom guys a week and let's see if this truly is 50 down and 5 up.
5 up is actually pretty good. I think
it's awesome.
That's the real weakness of all of our online connectivity is the upload speed, which limits the ability of us to deliver, to send out high quality video.
Yeah. They're bringing me a new modem, so I'm sure they're bringing me a DOCSIS 2 modem. They're not calling it DOCSIS 2.0, but to get 55, it has to be DOCSIS 2.0. You know, so, And everyone I'm talking to, they're like, what? That's available? So all my buddies are calling and upgrading their speed. And so I'll see how it works. I would like to, my broadband bill here is pretty high because I've got so many connections. As a matter of fact, I'm pushing the Ustream stream on a EVDO card right now because I'm tapped out. So, maybe we'll be able to put most of it on one connection. I can get rid of some bills. Let's
see that new set-top box from TiVo that was announced last week.
Yeah, I've never been a big TiVo follower of what they have. Tell me about it.
Well, they pushed out a new upgrade box. It's like a real premium box. It's got the capability of recording 4 simultaneous TV shows at the same time.
Wow.
And it has a 2 terabyte internal hard drive that's capable of storing, I think it was 600 to 800 hours of HD video.
Huh.
So it's a huge upgrade. And I guess the processor speed of the box has been greatly improved as well. So it operates pretty darn fast. And it's only, I think, $199, $299, one of those two.
Well, that's a pretty aggressive price. Now, one thing that I had happened here too was when we were talking with the Hawaiian Telecom guy. He says, we'll do 2 TVs. He says, $495 extra for another box in your bedroom, and you'll be able to record up to 2 channels at once. And he warned me that my internet speed would be affected by the number of DVR recordings I was making at the same time. I thought, oh, really? So they're delivering, here's what it is. They're delivering this video via IP. It's an IP-based television system. Has to be.
Huh. Well, I mean, it's all digital anyway,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But there's fiber close. He said the fiber, if I was to measure it, I'm probably, how long is a city block? 500 feet or something like that. I don't know, but 2 city blocks away, I have fiber from where I'm at now, as compared to before, a little over 5,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So, hey, let's talk about Arrington and his whole thing with AOL and TechCrunch. And did you follow that whole mess?
Yeah, I tried to follow it as much as I could. Yeah, I mean, this has been something that's brewing off and on for a long time with him.
Yeah,
you know, AOL. I'm not surprised that it's reached a head here.
Do you think Arianna Huffington will be installing her own person there?
Yes.
I think that's the end of TechCrunch.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think what you're seeing there is really kind of a trend of, you know, a lot of these guys that built these properties had a lot of editorial independence, and
right.
I mean, you look at what happened to Engadget as well, you know, yep. Joshua Topolsky, packing up and then all of the editors moving out of there. And now you see it happening to TechCrunch, you know.
When are those guys going to launch your SB Nation thing? Is that happening this fall?
Yeah, it's from what I hear, I think it's going to happen in November, October, or something like that.
I think it's going to be I think it's going to be huge. If they're waiting this long to launch it, they're going to come out swinging hard.
Well, it takes a while to build a robust website, so that's really what they're doing. You know, it's really been an unusual process for them because they came out with a whole nother brand in the meantime, right? This,
intern brand or whatever it was.
Yeah. And it almost feels like that brand is actually better than the new one they want to come out with, The Verge, you know? So it makes me wonder if in the end they may wind up keeping the one that they launched with.
I wonder what those writers at TechCrunch make. Are they on salary? Or are they on a per article performance based type of?
Yeah, I would think they're on a per word basis. Would be my guess.
You know, I'd like to pay my bloggers higher. Right? You know, I pay $7.50 a post, and I'd really like to have that more around $10 or $15 a post. And it's tough. I have to. You know, I got to figure out what makes sense economically, and I don't dictate performance. I'm not dictating topics, and you know, some of the topics are better than others. And I do have a special price that we pay for, like what I call it, a feature article, and they basically decide what their feature article is going to be, and I'll have asked if they've spent more time writing on it. But, I'd love to have these guys on full time if I could, get the view count to where it would need to be to sustain it. But you got to deliver a lot of views to have people blogging on salary.
Yeah. So how is the overall traffic to blog posts like that these days? Is it still climbing?
Traffic is up about 300%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so up.
What time frame is that? Is that last year and a half?
We've increased 300%. Yeah, last year and a half.
So where is most of your traffic, originating from? Is it coming out of the social platforms, or is it coming out of Google?
I think we still get at least 50% of traffic is still from Google, but we get in. A lot of generic links from other sites, stuff from, Twitter drives a lot. Google Plus drives a huge amount of traffic. It's interesting. It comes from a variety of different places, but the Google percentage is down. I'm actually happy about that. It's sustaining at the same level, but we're picking up new traffic on, from other sources is what we really needed to begin with anyway.
Do you worry or think about search engine optimization strategies anymore? Or is that basically gone out of most people's marketing concerns?
With 9,500 articles on the website, it has its own weight.
Kind of, yeah.
So Google treats me pretty good. Now, I don't get number one all the time, but I'm a number two or number three. Usually, and or are on the front page, so we don't focus on it. When CES content, absolutely, I focus real heavily on naming conventions, and we really came up with a pretty good strategy on that, and it's paid off huge. This year we're over 40 million views on our video content from CES.
Wow. And it's still rolling in, probably.
It's still rolling in. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Matter of fact, the server bills have been impressive, too.
So you're planning on going back to CES? You guys probably haven't announced
it. Yeah, we're talking with CEA. I think we're going to have another broadcast booth. We did basically go back, and we're trying to get a better location. In just a little bit better spot from a eye candy standpoint. The booth we were in last year was fantastic. It was easy to get to for logistically for us, but we were in the back of the South Hall, so it was quite a hike for people coming from Central. And we also had the booth that was across the hall from us had a wall, so that didn't help. So, you know, we're not going to be complaining, but we're working on several very large sponsorships right now. People have begun to recognize that what we're delivering is significant and has long tail to it. So we have two major companies looking at sponsoring us. So, you know, who knows what the way the economy is and if we're going to get the budget we want. But, you know, it's a $25,000 event. That's our cost. Our base cost is $25,000 just to take the team out. We have to raise $25,000 before even a single person earns a single penny.
Yeah.
So it's a huge, you know, my shipping alone last year was $3,000.
So are you going to Blog World?
We decided we are going to go to Blog World. We're going to have a booth and, we'll see how it goes.
November?
First week of November. First Thursday, Friday, Saturday in November, I believe. 3rd, 4th, 5th or something like that. Going to do the podcast award ceremony at Blog World. And okay. So that's back on. Matter of fact, we're going to launch podcast awards in 5 days, the nomination phase. And there'll be no, unless I get 10 very good sponsors, there'll be no trophies this year. So we'll do something else. But you know, it's going to be kind of tricky because it used to be all the podcasters all went to Podcast and New Media Expo. But now that it's Blog World and New Media Expo, I don't know if our 220 nominees will be there. So we may have an award ceremony where 4 or 5 people show up. So I'm kind of trying to put a plan together on how we handle an award ceremony where maybe there isn't so many podcasters.
Hey, Todd, have you ever seen a map that plots your content folks on where they live around the country, just to kind of get an idea where most podcasts are coming out of? Are they coming out of the East Coast? Or
we do on,
you know, where are the content providers?
We track listeners. We don't track where the providers are at. That's something we've never done. But I know where the majority of audiences are.
Big population areas, probably.
Well, Texas, California, East Coast is, believe it or not, it's weak. Washington.
So you're talking about Washington State?
Then there's probably a couple of, and maybe, see, let me just look at my stats. And, but believe it or not, the podcast listenership out of the East Coast is not as strong as it is out of the West Coast. I typed the wrong address here. I guess another topic is the firing of, while I'm looking this up, the firing of the gal at Yahoo. And she basically, she had some pretty strong words.
Yeah. There's been a lot of rumors flying around about, you know, America Online and Yahoo merging. And I just don't see that.
I had buddies, you know, remember when AOL used to send you all those CDs?
Yeah.
I used to tell all my friends, you know, this is a short-lived thing. It's primarily because they own stock in AOL. And, you know, they were doing very well at the time. And I basically said, at some point AOL's party's going to be over. You should sell your stock. And, you know, everyone poo-pooed me, you know. They really poo-pooed me. They're like, you know, what do you mean? What do you mean here? We're going to, you're not going to survive. And I basically told them. But the, and I think AOL is just headed for the toilet. Okay, let me go ahead. I'm bringing up my monthly stats here. And California makes up, this month, makes up 13.9% of my audience. Texas is 11. And then it drops off. And then each state gets single-digit percentages. Washington, 3.3. New York, 3.1. Missouri, 2.6. Florida, 2.2. Illinois, 2.2. Michigan, 2.2. So there's, it just, it kind of, then it, you know, but the huge release, my audience is California and Texas this month are the number two consumption states.
And I would say those are viewed as kind of more tech hubs, right?
Right.
Technology centers.
Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, and West Virginia, I think all combined there might be 3,000 listeners in those states. So yeah, a pretty small number for Montana, Wyoming, I guess South Dakota. Also, too, Vermont and Maine are pretty low as well. But everything else, and we got this little color chart here, is pretty equal from a listenership. But we ought to, maybe we ought to do a survey, find out where all the producers are. Where do you think they're all at?
I think they're, well, I think you're obviously going to get more podcasters that are coming out of higher dense population centers.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, that's probably, I'm just curious what the trends are for whether it's like New York. I mean, if you look at across the whole spectrum of podcasters or independent media creators, right? Either are they coming out of LA more now or Chicago or New York? I'm just curious on that. And no, then,
yeah.
And then also I wanted to ask you on your, if you look at your show distribution outside of the U.S.,
right,
what countries are dominating that? Is it Canada, Australia,
yeah,
that kind of stuff?
And okay, let me look here. Actually, I've had a pretty big increase of China listeners. So
yeah, I've seen that too in my Zoom numbers too.
And it's and they've really come on strong this year. And we are really doubtful, you know, okay, is these, yeah, bots? And we really, I mean, in fact, I had Angelo do a bunch of research to prove that the IPs we're registering are truly coming from China and they were not redirects. But China is right in my top five. I've got US, UK, Canada, Australia, China, Japan, France, Sweden, Germany. You know, my audience is huge. I think I'm in almost every country at this point. There is very few countries that I don't hit. And it's in some of these, the way they break it out in these stat systems too is, you know, for example, Cook Island and French Guiana and Niger and Seychelles. And I think Seychelles is actually a country. But to me, it's, you know, it's a very, it's an island. It's very small.
Yeah.
Cape Verde, and I don't know if Cape Verde's actually a country, but it's in my list here. But, you know, I've got, you know, I only have one, like five countries that only have one listener. And then it's, you know, within the bottom 20, we get in the hundreds and then it's in the thousands. But, yeah, China's made a huge, and I don't know if it's expats that are listening or if it's
it's got to be coming out of the IPs in China, right?
Yeah,
I mean those are geo associated. Yeah, I've seen it with the Zoom Insider podcast where I think the most recent numbers that I've seen shows the U.S. number one and China's number two as far as people listening,
wow,
to the Zoom Insider podcast.
That's amazing. I'm still running about 85% is my U.S. audience, and then it kind of trickles down from there. But here's the weird thing.
Yep.
The number of clients, I think we're tracking in our stat system, I think we're tracking 150, or Angela said 100, I think 147 devices. And it's you know, it's kind of weird on how you track devices because we almost consider like iTunes a device because iTunes is a means to get into a device, but also the phones themselves or the iPhone itself can connect and get the media. But iTunes, as far as my audience goes, makes up about 19% of my audience. BlackBerry is 15.7. Zoom Marketplace is 9. Believe it or not, people are using Windows Media Player. That's like 7%.
Well, also, just keep in mind too, when you guys are architecting this is that the Windows Phone 7 Mango is gonna download and have subscriptions right on the phone.
Right.
Native operating system.
But it'll have its it'll basically have its own identifier, so we'll be able to break that out. But it's amazing how you just look through this list and there's software that CG and Pullen shows down that has been not updated in years. You know, I still get a percentage of my audience that's using Juice. Remember that old that application? But you know, I go down further and my Google TV numbers are pretty impressive too. And I'm thinking, wow, that's interesting. So we kind of intermix software with devices, but you know what's missing from the list, Rob? Xbox. I've got PlayStation. Over 1,500 people a month that watch my show on PlayStation.
How do they do that?
Huh? There's some ways to consume podcasts on PlayStation.
Is there? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And I don't know if there is a Wii in this list or not. I don't know if I can do a control F on this sub box or not. Can I? Oh, yeah. Let's see if the Wii is on there. And no Wii. But it's, of course, Boxy and all these other different, the iPad, iPhone. But it's, I don't see Windows Phone 7 yet.
So what did you think of the whole Boxy deal with the TV manufacturer that
ViewSonic pulling out?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting move, but here's the question. Have you seen a ViewSonic TV sold in Best Buy?
I don't think I've ever seen a ViewSonic TV.
Right. That's kind of my thought. ViewSonic's more known for computer monitors, aren't they?
Yeah. But I'm not sure that has anything to do with this particular aspect, because I mean, you would think that would have been a way that they could differentiate.
Yeah.
I wonder if it says more about the market viability of Boxy.
Potentially, yeah. It's I think Boxy is. I think Roku's kicking their butt. At least the stats show that Roku's kicking their butt. From a number standpoint. But, it's almost 3-1. Three times the number of people are using a Roku to consume content that I'm seeing than Boxy. So maybe that was part of it too. You know, Boxy's easy to develop too, though. That's the sad part. You know, a developer can put a Boxy app together for a couple grand easy. The Roku, if you're building something on the Roku from scratch, you're looking at a lot more money. But we just got to figure out when Microsoft's going to open up the Xbox and let us build to that too. But I think that'll be a cold day, and you know what? So are you guys?
No comment on that one.
Yeah, because we got to remind everyone, Rob is his employer is on the bottom of the screen there. So we Zoom.
Actually, yeah, I actually work now for Xbox Live, so
you really can't say nothing. A risk of being fired, so I'm not even going to ask. Hey, what happened? But I do want to ask, what happened with Microsoft posting security bulletins 4 days early? Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
I saw
the hackers a little bit of lead time, huh?
But anyway, they threw the patches went instead of Tuesday. I got the notice. I got the patches. I actually updated. I thought it was kind of odd that they had come through, but it did. Big rumor still that Apple's going to be building an Apple TV in 12. And, I think about that for a second. If anybody could do it, they can. And if anybody can spin the way people use TV, they can. If they do it, it's going to change everything. I really, truly think it will. The question will be is, will they be able to make the price point without the 50% markup that is going to get people to be able to buy these things?
Do you want my thoughts on what, if they're going to do that, it's going to be an all-in-one computer. It's going to be, it's basically going to be a
50-inch computer.
It's going to be an Apple TV, would be my guess. And it'll have the ability to connect to, you know, Macs on a network. It'll have, it'll be really expensive for one thing, but that's never stopped Apple.
Yeah. You know, you look what they've done. You look at, they've dominated the tablet world. They're dominating, well, not so much dominating the phone world. Android's giving them a run for the money, and Windows Phone 7's actually in there, finally making some uptick in marks too. So the question then is, you know, that the last frontier is really the television set in the home. So,
I mean, it's a big gamble for Apple to go that route because, you know, I mean, unless they really treat it just like an iPhone or an iPad, right?
Yeah.
As far as with software updates and that you would easily be able to get cable television through it. You would be able to do all the things that basically a set-top box would be able to do. And plus you'd be able to plug in a set-top box. I mean, I can see a market for that, mm-hmm. and I can see them doing it. It is somewhat a less of a disposable item. I think most people, when they buy a TV, they keep it for a long period of time.
But the average home buys a new television set every 3 years.
Yeah, but how often do people buy new phones and new, you know, slates and computers too?
That's true.
I usually keep my TVs longer than 3 years. I don't know about you.
Well, I keep them longer than 3 years, but they say that the reason is as families grow, they buy more TVs to go into. You know, I'll just look what's happening here in my house. You know, I got the kids got an Xbox, they got a PlayStation 2 and a Wii, and you know, I don't want them in the living room.
That's a lot of gaming consoles.
It is, and it really the only thing they're playing right now is the Xbox. But I want them in the other room. I don't want them in the living room. You know, I like gaming and stuff, but I don't game, so. I want them in the garage with their own television in there. Or right now they're using my bedroom. You know, they're going in because that's where the other, I have a 40-inch screen in there and they want to use that one. So, you know, you have to sit on the floor, guys. Don't sit on the bed, you know. So it's you know, people buy TVs because families expand and wives don't want the kids in the master bedroom and they don't want them in the main living room making noise. They want them in the gaming room or they want them in the garage, you know. That's where they want them, at least at my house.
I mean, that raises a really interesting question, and I wonder if Apple is thinking about this, is the whole aspect of once you start going into smart TVs more and more, and you basically expand what those TVs can do, right? From games to movies to TV to social applications to conference, you know, calling people and doing video calls, and I mean, all these other functions that that larger screen could do for you. You basically come into this area, well, you know, you have three people sitting in the TV room, you know, your family, who controls what happens on the TV when a lot of the activity on the TV is very associated with one user, and it may not be applicable to multiple people watching that screen at the same time because they may not be involved or they may not have an interest in what's there. I mean, that's the part that concerns me about typically how TVs are consumed. It's a family experience, right? But you're not going to, you know, you're not going to have a bunch of people sitting around watching you play a video game.
Right.
You're not going to have a lot of people sitting around watching you have a video chat with a friend of yours. So on your television.
Although this right here, this Logitech TV cam, have you seen this in operation before?
No, I've actually never used one.
Unbelievable,
but I can visualize.
They're nice. They're real. It gives a wide view. They can see, you know, in my house, you can see the living room and part of the kitchen, and the speaker's good.
I mean that's the same capability that the Microsoft Kinect has,
right?
It's got full motion video, voice sensing capability.
But my mom doesn't have an Xbox.
Yeah,
you know.
True. That's true.
So, and it just works cool. It really does. Well, Rob, we're here. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I just think that, you know, to kind of wrap that up, that's the interesting part of the transition that I think that it really is before us about what's going to happen with the TV experiences and with, you know, does this mean that there's going to be multiple TVs, large screen TVs in our houses because everybody's going to want to treat them like a computer? I think that's the big question.
I think there's going to be one that will.
One TV?
Or
in the long run, is there not going to be a distinction between a large computer screen and a... I mean, it's just going to be...
The cable companies don't want it. I can tell you that much. You know, look at what Netflix just did. If you're on their streaming only plan, you can do one stream at a time. If you are on their DVD delivery where you're getting two DVDs, you can do two streams at the same time. So, you know, Netflix is already being impacted by people using multiple streams at the same time. Daughter in the bedroom watching a movie, mom and dad in the living room watching a movie. We don't allow that in our house, but I'm sure a lot of families do. Or better yet, the son goes off to college. Dad, can I have the Netflix account number? You know, and he goes and he has Netflix in his room in his college dorm. He can watch movies there, you know. So
much for family time.
Right. Well, we still, you know, Friday and Saturday nights around here are family nights. We basically block out all activity. One last thing before we bounce out of here, Rob, we're almost at the hour and a half mark, is the Microsoft demos fast boot times with Windows 8. Pretty exciting stuff. I like a 7-second boot.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many people are going to be willing to, you know, it's not shutting the computer down completely. It's kind of going into a standby mode.
Yeah. Well, I think that's how, I mean, I think that the expectation has been set with mobile phones, right? They come on instantly and you know, the whole, I just think that's kind of a mobile thing, right?
Right.
That people just expect them to instantly turn on. It's kind of like turning on the TV, right?
Yep. And the key to this new thing is that they don't close the kernel session. They hibernate it. But, you know, I think, you know, especially on Windows machines, I'll be honest with you, I like a fresh reboot on a laptop every 2 or 3 days. My desktop runs for weeks and weeks without a boot up. But something about laptops need more caressing. Of course, my Mac is the same way. You know, people tell you a Mac will run weeks and weeks without a reboot. They're smoking crack too.
I think you should do that with any phone or laptop or computer.
My wife was saying, honey, my iPad is so slow. And I'm like, when was the last time you restarted it? She looked at me. She goes, what do you mean restart? I'm like, you mean you know you can restart that just like your iPhone? Oh. And, you know,
interesting. That's really interesting.
It hadn't been rebooted in months.
No.
And she doesn't sync it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
it's a different expectation. The mobile phone has set a new expectation.
It sure has.
And I think Windows 8 is only reflecting that.
Yep.
It's becoming more and more a kind of a mobile operating system, really.
Yeah. You know, and I was due to buy another laptop. My laptop has seen better days and for my Windows side. And basically when I travel with two laptops. One machine is, I travel with a Mac and I travel with a PC, and the Mac is used for one function and part of the show production. The PC is used for another. And the PC side of the house was getting a little long in the tooth. And I went and bought a Dell XPS laptop. Not a super high-end one. I think I paid about $1,200 for it. It's got, I think it's pretty low processor in it. Intel, it goes up to 2.2, 8 cores, of course. But it's got that hyperdrive, takes up to 2.9. It's not a super fast machine. But boy, I tell you, when you're with Dell and you start adding all their little functions, and next thing you know, you got a $2,500 laptop. And I said, nah, let's just go with a little lower end one this time and see how it works.
Yeah, I had my Windows Home Server fail on me about 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
And what it turned out to be is my power supply failed.
Were you able to get it fixed?
Yeah, I actually had to order a custom one out of from a guy in the UK. That was the only place you could get one.
Because you had an HP one? Is that what you had?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I got HP MediaSmart EX470, which is the original one.
Right.
And I've done a lot of modding on that thing. I put in more RAM, and I added a much faster CPU to it.
Well, I actually upgraded mine because the machine, the one I had before, was the first gen one, and I had maxed it out.
Yep.
And it basically was doing everything it possibly could do. And now what I've done here is I went to a little different strategy. I'm only backing up PCs on the Windows Home Server, and I've got the Mac backup solution, whatever it's called. It's a white box that you plug in and Time Warp backs up to it. Pretty seamless, just like the PC version, but I feel pretty comfortable. And also using Carbonite to back up some machines as well. So if the house burns down, at least stuff will be up in Carbonite and safety deposit box. And you just worry about what you missed.
I mean, my home server is working fantastic now. I upgraded to the 3.0 version of the software.
Right.
Actually, I got that from HP over a year ago.
Yep.
And so I did a complete revamp on this home server, and it's running like a soldier now.
What I like about it is it pops up on my window, says, hey, such and such machine hasn't been backed up in 3 or 4 days. And like this one audio machine here, it doesn't get any updates. It's isolated from the world. It is, let me show it to you. It basically, this is from Sweetwater. It gets no patches, nothing. It runs in a default configuration to maintain high performance, and I don't introduce any weird stuff. So really, I don't have to back it up that often. So because it's got it doesn't change, and it can't see the rest of the world. It sees the network, and then that's it. It's just basically the internal network. But it'll tell me, the thing hasn't been backed up in 10 days. Yeah, make sure you leave it on overnight and back it up. But I've learned a cute trick. I learned how to, bridge networks, because these machines back here are on a different network. And that is a pretty cool Windows feature that Apple does not have that, allows me to bridge stuff. Well, Rob, let's get this out of here. We're already at hour 30. And for those of you that have been hanging out with us, this has kind of been a loose and goosey Saturday morning tech show. Hope you've enjoyed it. Rob, thanks for hanging out with me. So you got any more events with the Leaf, or how's that been going?
It's going great. No, actually, I don't have any events here shortly. I think there's one in a couple of weeks at a Nissan dealer that I may swing by, or there, a bunch of Leaf owners are going to come by, and there's gonna be a barbecue and that kind of stuff. So, but it's the car is doing great. I have no complaints. It's it gets me back and forth to work every day, and I haven't been to a gas station in months.
I did some testing here, and my average daily, or between my wife and I, we're running about 72, 73 miles is about our average round trip stuff we do on a weekly basis. I very rarely bust that. So I might actually be a candidate for one of these vehicles.
That, and there is a new electric vehicle that's going to be coming out pretty soon called Dakota.
I don't know if
you've heard of this.
Who's it made by?
It's actually made by a car company in California.
Huh.
And it's called Coda, C-O-D-A.
Uh-huh.
And this car is going to have batteries to support, I think it was 36 kilowatt hours, which puts the car out at about 150 miles.
I hear. Well, there it is.
Yep.
Huh.
It's about 150 miles range. It's got more batteries in it than the Leaf has.
What is the price on this thing going to be?
It's like 40, I think 42,000.
That's,
I know it's not cheap. That's for sure.
And at 36 plus, cents a kilowatt, what does it charge? How much is your electricity bill went up?
Only about $25 a month.
So that would be about 100 here.
Would it?
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot more expensive there, I take it.
Yes, 36 cents a kilowatt is what we pay an hour right now.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think we're at like 9 cents.
So four times more. So it'd be about $100 a year. But my Rob, my gas bill is $400.
Wow. That's
so amazing. You know, if you think about it, and if it's 40 grand, your normal, you know, if you you put $10,000 or $15,000 down, and then
so you get a $7,500 federal tax credit,
huh,
too. And then if I don't know if Hawaii does this, but I didn't have to pay sales tax on it. So
see, and just in gas savings alone, you can almost justify the additional money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think gas is going to get any cheaper anytime soon. So when's this supposed to come out?
I don't know. Does it say on the website there?
No, but I'll have to look for it.
I mean, their model year that they're shooting for is a 2012. So I'm assuming it's coming out soon.
This scares me a little bit. Not showy, but packed with substance. Yeah.
Well, it's just not a flashy car. It's not like a right. Tesla Roadster or something like that, right?
Yeah, it actually looks kind of cute from the outside. As long as it's not like Japanese car where 20 years on the inside. Got to have a few things out here. Let's look at the inside of this thing. There's the outside picture. Let's look at is it going to show me? The interior. Yeah, okay, I want to see the dashboard. Come on.
That should show you that. Was that lights on, lights off? Is that what that was?
Yeah, well, it's leather or... Well, it's just basically showing you the different options, but it doesn't show you too much yet of the inside, so which makes me think that they don't have it completely locked in on what their dash is going to look like. You know, I don't know. I'm going to have to see what Ford comes out with too. I really like what they're doing with Sync and all those features, and I'm going to have to check that out too. But the Coda, the thing you worry about these types of companies is that will they survive long enough? Am I going to get warranty support in 5 years when I need it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I did feel really confident that Nissan was going to be around.
Yeah, I don't think Nissan's going anywhere, but Coda, I don't know. Okay. Well, Rob, let's get out of here. Everyone, if you got comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. I am going to be bringing the stream down real quick. I want to ask Rob a couple of questions that I can't ask on the air. So if everyone that's been hanging out with me, thanks. We're going to replay mode after a little bit here. And those of you who are subscribed to the show, thanks for being subscribed. Make sure you check out the Robot Underpants, the Gadget Professor. Doing some great stuff there. Of course, my regular weekly show, geeknewscentral.com, as well. Rob, thanks.
That was fun. It was great. Thanks.
Everyone take care and aloha. All right, Rob, give me a second to get this stream shut down.
Okay.